Welcome to the most electrifying show, where we discuss all topics related to high voltage. Let's go! All right, everybody, welcome back. Another week, Working with Lightning. Thanks for joining us. Today, I know we teased it last week, but today we're going to have a special guest with Joey Bannerman. Again, I know we referenced it last week. I believe he was on season one, episode 16 and 17.
Correct.
Bannerman Training and Consulting. He owns his own company. He's been doing this a long time, and we'll get into that again here in a little bit as we do bring him on. I want to tie up some loose ends real quick. Well, first, Paul, welcome back.
Yes, good to be back.
I'm glad to have you, man. I really do appreciate you coming on. Anything this week you need to share? Anything you setting the earth on fire? What's going on,
man? Everything's went well. Just coming off Easter, you know, enjoyed all that and just kind of laid back and waiting for what's next.
That's right. Yeah. Well, live line bear hand is what's next, my friend.
And too, we're in April. I mean, it's I know hard it. To believe already.
April. The year's going by,
brother. It is going by.
So, before we bring in Joey, let me tie up some loose ends real quick. Again, if y'all been listening, we're working with Zach, his wife Melinda, with Line brotherskeeper.org. If y'all haven't, go back, check out that episode, go to his website. If you go to his website and donate, every $25 you donate puts you in the drawing. And again, the drawing we clearly go into in the show with him and Melinda that aired, I should have this written down if I was a good host, but I want to say it aired, I can check the calendar real quick, February 18th is when that show was published. February 18th. I'll just recap it real quick. So again, every $25 puts you in a drawing. So if you donate 100, you get four drawings. That's right. But anyhow, first place, the grand prize, Zach makes some handmade wood climbing hooks. They look pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's neat. Yep.
You can't climb with them. Probably not very far. But he makes them. They do look cool. I've told him numerous times, I'm going to get a line belt and hooks from him. They're really cool. They'll be a great backdrop once we can, you know, get an official studio, maybe get some video going. I think they'll be really awesome.
You look good.
Yep. Runner up. That means you finished in second place. You're the first loser. Runner up is going to receive a 20 quart cooler, and we're going to fill it with the following swag. You're going to get some tumblers, you're going to get some koozies, you're going to get some coasters, you're going to get, we had one zipper tool bag left. So Paul, when we first started this, we had ordered a bunch of zipper tool bags.
Yes.
You know, branded to Working with Lightning logo and all that. We have one left. This is how we're going to get rid of it. So it's going to be in that cooler.
It's special.
That's right. And then we're going to throw in a bunch of stickers. We got 12 or more, you know, hard hat stickers and whatnot. And in third place, you are the second loser or second runner up, as the politically correct class would say, right? Third place, you're going to get our standard care package that we always give to any guest that comes on the show, of which that includes one tumbler, one koozie, one coaster, and then, you know, 5, 6, 7, we just throw a handful of stickers, you know, hard hat stickers in there. So again, y'all check out his story. The drawing for that will be August 25th. Again, if you've already listened to the show with Zach and Melinda, that is his burniversary, as he calls it. So August 25th is the drawing. I don't even know what day of the week that is. So
I don't either.
We will make the drawing whatever that Sunday, Monday is. If that ends up being August 23rd or August 28th, you know what? Maybe we just do the drawing on a quick show and we air it on August 25th, no matter what day of the week that is.
We could do that.
That would make sense because, again, that's an important date to Zach. So maybe that's how we'll do it.
August 25th.
Oh, what'd you got?
The 25th is Sunday.
It is. Man, doesn't that time out perfect?
Yep.
And also, again, y'all have already heard it with previous guests, but now what we're doing anytime a guest comes on, so if you are contemplating coming on the show, we give you the option. If you want the standard care package as being a guest, that's fine. No hard feelings. I'm going to mail you one. But I also give you the option, and what we will do, Working with Lightning, we donate $25 to their nonprofit, and that puts you in the drawing to possibly win the other prizes. So since Joey's already been on the show, I imagine he's already got his care package, so I assume he'll probably take the donation in his name.
Yes.
But we'll find out later. We'll ask him once we bring him in. But again, great organization. I can tell y'all, I've talked to Zach numerous times off the air, obviously, and then he's been on the show twice now.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife, Melinda, and she's constantly communicating with my wife. They're great people. I mean, I'm so glad we can try to help him out. Hopefully this brings some traction to his story, to his nonprofit organization. And also, I need to remind y'all, we have put together the special tumblers or cups that are co-branded with the Working with Lightning and the Line Brothers Keeper organization. That's a limited run. I think we have 10. I know we've already sold a couple, but all proceeds go back to his organization as well. So we're not, sorry, Paul, now that you're part of our team, we ain't making a penny on them. Yeah. But it's going to a dang better good cause. Yeah. That's right. Better it's going calls. To a dang good cause.
And again, if you donate to the cause, then you're still setting yourself up for an opportunity to win the package anyway.
Which is, yeah, honestly, all three packages are worth more than the $25 donation.
Yes.
So, yeah, you can't go wrong, right? You're helping out a good organization, and you're in the running to win more than what you could have bought off of a website for the $25.
And the more donation, the more chances you have to
that's win right.
the package.
That's right. But yeah, Melinda, Texas, every time someone donates, and I'll run back through this. If you are a weekly listener, I'm sure you're rolling your eyes. You're tired of hearing about it, but this is our job. We had to plug them. They're great people. They're doing good things to us in the industry. But yeah, when you go on our website, actually, Zach contacted me a while back and told me they were seeing so much web traffic. And what we were having to do, Paul, is in the comments, you would have to write Working with Lightning. And that's how they knew you were donating based on the show,
yes.
right? They told me they were adding a button or a link or whatever you want to call it, a widget. I don't even know what widget is, but I hear it all the time. Mm-hmm. That now, if you're donating for Working with Lightning, you just click it and automatically processes it as, okay, this is part of the show. So now you're also entered into the raffle.
Makes it easy.
I can honestly say I have not logged in to see that widget or that link. I should, just so I know what I'm talking about. But if not, if you don't see that button or that link, just in the comments when you donate, type in WWL, Working with Lightning, Working with Lightning podcast. We don't care, right? It doesn't have to be official. Just give us something so that it's obvious. It's because of the podcast, and that's going to put you in the running for the handout, the giveaway.
Yes.
All right, so there's that loose ends I needed to, hey, you know, we got to advertise for them, man. I want them to do good. They're helping a lot of people out. Actually, Zach and Melinda, we've been talking to them about a show maybe coming up, I don't know, mid-June, which would be about the halfway point to when their first show aired and we started the contest until the August drawing date.
Yes.
And I think that's going to be really cool if it comes together how we're kind of planning it. But you know how that goes. I have a lot of great ideas, but that don't mean they turn out great. Yeah. So anyhow.
You got to try it.
That's right. So, Paul, do you have anything or should we bring Joey on?
No, I think I'm good today. And, you know, just a shout out to that cause again that if you can, you know, help that. And we'll keep up with the progression on that and see how it's going. And I think it's time to bring Joey in.
All right, let's do it. So, Joey, anybody that doesn't remember from, again, episode, I believe it was 16 to 17, last year. Joey's been in this industry over 42 years at this point.
Long time.
Yeah, that's more than I've been alive. Yeah. So Joey started off as a lineman. He was also a substation technician. And in 1998, Joey went into training. And that's pretty much what he's been doing since 1998, you know, in different capacities, different roles. Joey currently owns his own company, which is Bannerman Training and Consulting. We got a lot we can learn from Joey. And Joey, welcome back to the show, man.
Thanks. Great to be back.
Man, I'm glad you reached out, and especially with the content. I believe I told the listeners last week that we're probably going to have you on here 2-3 times over the next, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. Yeah. And instead of doing, you know, just general conversation, I know you kind of proposed we're going to hammer down specifically on some topics, and today being Live Line Bear Hand. So I like that format. I think this is how we, you know, we're always learning in this industry, right? So, you know, we're students of the industry. So I think this format is good for, well, for idiots like me. I've never live line bear hand. I've heard a lot of rumors. I've seen it done, but you know, watching something ain't the same as actually understanding what and why they're doing exactly what they're doing. So I really like this format. And Joey, did you have anything you want to add to your intro, or are you ready to get in with all my stupid questions?
Oh, I'm ready to get into it.
All right. So I guess in my head, when we originally, you know, kind of pitched the show idea, I was like, well, let's start from the beginning. So I want to start from the beginning, Joey. If we're going to do live line bear hand today, Joey, could you name a task? What would be a task that we would do live line bear hand for? That way I can kind of stay pointed throughout the day show.
One of the ones that we do quite a bit at loaders, you know, build a temporary, like a little shoe fly around a structure, a switch, whatever it is that we're trying to replace, and we can't take the lines out. So what we end up doing is building a temporary line and cutting floaters in.
Okay.
So we act like that structure isolated.
So I'm writing this down so I can stay on topic throughout the day, which I'm terrible at. So you're saying we're going to build a floater and a shoe fly?
Well, you're going to install a floater. When you cut an insulator in the main line, line so that you can do a section of it.
Right.
And then before you do that, you got to keep the power flowing like to a substation, to a customer. What you end up doing is you build a temporary line, the energized part, to feed that customer. And then you cut the floaters in on each side of the, say you're isolating a switch to repair it or replace it, floaters in so that you can actually isolate that line and that section of line and that structure.
Okay. So I want to use some term. Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Some maybe more familiar terminology. You're kind of boxing out the area that you're going to work.
Yeah, you're right. And then I'm actually going to ask this too, Joey. So I did a short, I don't know, 4-6 month stint as a transmission line supervisor. Is this what those floaters that you're calling that? Is that what my guys were calling Johnny Balls? Have you ever heard that terminology?
No, Johnny Balls are, well, that terminology, a lot of the layman slang, you can end up, one crew will call something a Johnny Ball and another crew will call it a monkey fist.
Yep. I mean, okay.
What about some old terminology as a flying dead end?
Yeah, I've heard that term too.
We need to start a dictionary here. what does all this mean?
Yeah. You know, a lot of times, let's say that you're installing a new switch in the line. That's a low profile switch that's underneath the line.
Okay.
And so you get the switch in, you go up with your jumpers, close your switch. But even if I open the switch, unless I cut insulators in that main line, the power's still going to flow, right? So the floaters, the floating dead ends are up above that switch also.
Okay.
So you got a set of insulators that's in the main line so that when you open the switch, you actually drop the load.
Right.
Or you sectionalize that
line. Right. Yeah, that's what you're doing. You're sectionalizing. Yeah, I got you. All right. So we're going to do this task with the floaters, right? Or box in a station, however we want to reference that. Again, just for my good, let's start from, we show up to the site. If I'm doing terminology. If I'm doing a pre-job brief or a JHA or JSA, whatever your company calls that, what are some of the first things? Again, I've never been involved in a pre-job with Live Line Barahand. What are some of the first things that I probably need to be hearing or seeing documented or discussed that I typically wouldn't in that pre-job brief?
Typically, what we do that uses the same pre-job form that the guys use every day.
Right.
Covering all the hazards of everything that's going on. And then once we get ready to get through all that, we've got a pre-flight checklist that we do for the bucket where, you know, we run it through its full range of motion. We make sure the boom's all wiped down, hook the vol meter up, run the vol meter through a self-test, and then we check the atmospheric valves. A lot of people don't know what the atmospheric vent valves are, but they're basically an addition that was done to trucks 55 feet and above where there were some fatalities associated with, it was in the early 90s, with a hydraulic line in the boom failing. And with it being an enclosed boom, you don't see the hydraulic fluid running out of the boom.
Oh, yep. Okay.
So as the hydraulic fluid leaked down in the hose, and some of you guys that are familiar with what liquids do under a vacuum, when you put a liquid under a vacuum, you can actually start it to boil very low temperature.
Yep.
So what ended up happening was the contaminants that were emulsified in the hydraulic fluid, which really doesn't cause a problem unless they get by themselves, those contaminants basically started filling up the void in the hydraulic line as the hydraulic fluid leaked out. And when it bridged enough of the boom, it flashed the boom and blew the bucket off the end of the boom.
So you had to bleed over.
Yeah,
which
was fun. With the guys in it. So basically what they came up with, it's a little check valve that has a little rock filter on the end of it. And if it starts to pull a vacuum, if a line fails and that vacuum starts to be pulled, that check valve opens up and lets air in so it doesn't get to a point where the vacuum will cause the contaminants to boil out. And so, it's filling it up with the same air that's inside the boom pretty much anyway. You know, it's atmosphere.
Right.
Same air that the boom is operating in.
Right.
So they are on all Class A and Class B buckets. So on the Class B bucket, they typically only get tested once a year. On a Class A bucket, you're getting ready to do bare hand work. So you're going to test each one of those atmospheric vent valves prior to use each day.
All right. Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't like cutting you off, especially in the middle of a train of thought, but I want to go back before I forget what you're saying. First, did you say a VOM meter as in Victor Oscar Mike, or did you say like a bomb meter? What were you saying there?
VON. V as in Victor Oscar Nancy.
Oh, Victor Oscar Nancy, VON. What is that? And then what are you, I mean, it's a meter, so you're checking or testing something. What can you explain? Explain the Von meter process to me?
Yeah, basically the Von meter is there's some circuitry that picks up leakage current that's coming down the components of the boom. So there's some of the configurations are 7-pin that look at, it's like a military fitting, and it looks at the boom, the hoses, and you're leveling all independently, and you can see each one independently, see how much leakage current is coming down the boom on each one of those different circuits. So that is pretty much letting you know, it basically tells you a lot of stuff. One is the contamination of that's on the boom and how well you cleaned it off, how much moisture is on the boom. It also lets you know whether your hydraulic fluid is starting to break down. So there's a lot of different things that looks at, or those three components is what it's really looking at. Then there's another one with a coax cable that combines all three together and sends the reading into the Von meter. It's not adding everything up. It's giving you the highest reading of any of those three circuits.
Okay. So it's basically giving you your worst case scenario. Right. So it's getting whichever one of those three are the worst, that's likely the reading that you're getting.
Yes.
Okay.
One of the advantages of the 7-pin is typically if I'm getting a high reading in the morning, I can scroll through and see that, hey, it's my boom. I need to stove pipe it or stand the boom straight up so that the convection can kind of take the moisture off of it.
Yeah.
That kind of gives you a good feeling about, you know, I'm doing the right thing by either wiping it down again or stove piping it.
So basically, it's telling you how well your isolation is or not.
Yeah, well, and you know, basically, back in the day, before these meters came out, there was an amp meter that was hooked to the boom.
Yeah, it had a little cord that went and plugged into the boom itself.
Really?
Yep. And so, but you were looking at it was like a Fluke amp meter.
Yes.
And you're having to stand there and look at it. This Von meter has alarms that go off to let you know that you have set points, and your set points are based on the face-to-face voltage of the circuit that you're working.
Okay.
You take your face-to-face voltage and divide it by the square root of 3 mm-hmm. at 1.732. That gives you the maximum allowable leakage current, so per kV. So
okay, so this test is giving me my leakage current? The test isn't, but that's really what you're trying to monitor.
Well, on the Von meter, you've got a set point.
Right.
So let's say I'm doing a 115 circuit. I'd set my Von meter, my preset would be on 66 or 67. That's depending on how that meter's set up.
Mm-hmm.
And if at any point I get to that set point, an alarm goes off. So, but typically, and one of the other things that you do, kind of part of the pre-job, but it's continuous thing, there's a logbook that when you do your air gap in your contact test, you're going to move in within your mat for 1 minute, and that's going to be considered your air gap.
Okay.
If your air gap reading is really high, then you're not going to make contact. And it's especially down this time of year down in Florida when there's a lot of dew and everything in the morning, sometimes it takes a while for the boom to get dry enough to where you can actually test the bucket.
I got you.
But if you've got a really high reading in your air gap, then you're not going to make contact.
So are you saying basically if your reading is already too high or suspect on an air gap, there's no need in even making contact because you're already going to fail? Is that what you're getting at?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I got you.
So let's say that the morning was really wet or it rained last night.
Mm-hmm.
And first thing in the morning, I'm supposed to get started. So I go and I go to do my air gap. If I'm on a 115 circuit and my air gap's reading 50, I'm not going to make contact.
Right. Yes. Right. Yeah. Why are we wasting our time? I got you. All right. I wanted to ask two questions. Paul, you go ahead. Paul's been indicating he's got a question, and then I got a couple more. So go ahead.
Going back 2 minutes ago, just so people understand, you categorized two different buckets. You said a Class A and a Class B, and you said like the Class B is tested once a year. The Class A is every time you do the live line. What can you just kind of briefly give us a breakdown between the two bucket classes?
Yeah. Your B buckets are your primary insulation is your air gap.
Okay.
Minimum approach.
Right.
The fiberglass of the boom is secondary. On a Class A bucket, your fiberglass is your primary.
Okay.
Now, is this specific to transmission or our distribution buckets broke down the same exact way?
No, they're broken down the same exact way.
Okay, because just envisioning, at least the distribution buckets I've been a part of, they all have like the fiberglass liner, but yet the transmission buckets, they're all aluminum. Well, I don't know if they're aluminum, but they're a steel, a conductive metal. You know what I mean?
Well, but there are a lot of your bare hand buckets that you just put a metal, you take your insulated liner out, fiberglass, and you put a metal liner in.
Yes.
You know, you really can't do distribution work in a metal work basket.
Right.
So, but your category B buckets, they're basically any bucket that is used for electrical work that your B bucket, you have to use cover and you have to work at your minimum approach.
Right.
They're not tested the same and they're not certified the same way, because you send your that's A bucket off and it gets certified based on the voltage that you want it tested at. So if I'm going to be working a 500 kV circuit, I'm going to have it tested all the way to 500 kV, which is a very expensive test.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Up to 500, including 500. But most companies only go up to 230 unless they have a lot of P45.
Right. So, man, now I have like five questions. I'm sorry. I want to go back first and then move forward. I know you talked about cleaning the boom. What does that consist of? I'm visualizing that boom is acting as a shotgun stick, basically, right? I mean,
yeah.
So I know on a shotgun stick, like let's say Hastings or, you know, whatever. What is it? AB Chance, HB Chance, all of them, Hubble, Hastings. We just use like a silicone infused rag or towelette or whatever and wipe them down. I'm assuming when you're cleaning a boom, you're not using a $4 shotgun stick wipe. Like, so what does that process actually look like? Is there any special tooling or materials?
Not really. I mean, you pretty much use the same cleaners and waxes that you use on your hot sticks.
No kidding.
Yeah, because basically you have a big hot stick.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was envisioning in my head, but I'm also envisioning this has got to be bigger and better. You know what I mean?
You know, most of the time, most companies, and I highly recommend not using the silicone, but to use a good wax. Mm-hmm. And one of the main reasons for that is if you've ever got a repair that you have to do, it's really hard to get all that silicone off. So if you got to do any little sanding and stuff.
Oh.
Wants to ball up in the silicone.
Okay.
The other is a really good fiberglass wax, kind of helps prevent some of the UV damage.
Okay. And so it's protecting the boom from the sun.
Yeah. Most of the companies that I do the training for are contractors.
Right.
And, you know, they're leaving their equipment out in the field in the sun every day, all day. So they're the bare hand buckets, whether you're bare handed or not, if you don't bare hand for a month, you still need to go in and clean and wax that boom primarily for your UV protection.
All right. So if I'm waxing the boom, am I just Mr. Miyagi wax on, wax off with a rag, or are they using like a vehicle buffer, like a random orbital, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's just a handheld deal, just a rag.
Okay. And then my next question, kind of moving forward to where you were most recently at before we cut you off. I know you kept referencing your gap distance based on the MAD. Now, is that an industry standard set by the bucket? And here's why I asked that. I know like when I've worked in Nevada or Iowa, that utility, maybe one of them is 5'8" for 230, right? And the other one might be 5'5". So I can see where that would affect those results, right? If you're not swinging it into a bigger or smaller air gap. So is that, when you say the MAD distance, are you using a basic industry standard for the boom and calling that the MAD, or are you using the local utility's actual MAD distances?
Typically, we use the local utility's MAD distance, okay. But you're going to take it within that range. So like on a 69 circuit, you're probably going to get 18 inches or so from the wire.
Okay, I got you. So you're going to break the MAD anyway.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm not out there with like a laser rangefinder going, oh, nope, you're a quarter inch from 5'8". So again, if a utility has 5'5" and another one's 5'8", you're going to swing her in there to 4.5 or 5 anyway, and it's not going to matter.
Yeah. On a 230 circuit, you're probably going to get 3 feet away.
Okay. I got you. And that's going to be far inside of any mat out there, more than likely.
Well, you're having to encroach mat to clip in, right?
Yeah. But you're going to do your air gap for a minute, and then you're going to make your contact 3 minutes.
Correct.
All those readings are going to be written in a logbook that stays with that truck.
Right.
So let's say I was just barehanding yesterday and I can't remember what the readings were, it's in that logbook.
Yes.
So I can see this truck, there's something maybe going on with them. Maybe I've got some bonds that are getting loose. But that's part of your pre-flight. You're going to go through all that. You're going to check all of your bonding points. You're going to own those out first before you even fly the bucket.
And then when you do that, you reference back to the log, so that way if there's any deterioration or anything's changing, you have sense of that because your numbers are
you've been tracking data.
Yes, you got to have a base.
This may be jumping into it a little bit early, but your corona ring is the most important item on that boom.
All right, I want to jump in right there, Joey, because that was a question that was in my head. When I look at these buckets, at least a couple that I know with the local utility that I work with that were for live line bare hand, I was going to ask you, it always looked like there was a type of shield or corona ring. Again, I didn't even know what to call it. And if I remember right, they even had it labeled like from that ring forward was the hot end or hot section or whatever. Have I been seeing that right or am I completely off?
Well, yeah, on your all of the metal components that are from the corona ring out to the tip of the wand, if you're using a wand, they all have to be tied back to the corona ring.
Okay.
So what you're going to end up doing is you're going to take an ohm meter and you're going to start at the corona ring and you're going to make sure all your bonding leads, sometimes you can't see them, they're under guards and shields, but you're going to actually ohm out each section. And in the training, I've got a schematic that shows you know, how everything is supposed to be bonded back together. Sometimes if those get loose or you get a little rusty or whatever, and you don't have, and you're not less than one ohm when you ohm everything out, you can vary when you're doing your leakage current. So, we actually had a failure. There was a crew that had the metal work basket, and those are really easy to see because the bonding leads for those are typically a braided one that's out in the open air. It was broken, and they didn't fix it, and they stuck the boom on the 230 circuit, and when they did, it developed a corona streamer that flashed the boom.
Okay.
And it took the line out. So that was when everybody got a really good education in the importance of what the corona ring does and how it actually deflects the corona off the boom. And I've got a video that I run in class of a corona camera, and you can see everything. You can see that corona ring is not really doing anything until you make contact with the basket, and then all of a sudden that corona ring goes to work.
Really?
Yeah.
Man. Is that a long video?
No, it's not real long. It's 2 minutes, three
really?
Minutes.
Really? That would be cool to see, you know, for idiots like myself that are listening to this and never actually seen it, or, you know, it gives me a visual to reference to. All right, Paul, did you have anything before we move on?
No, I think we're good.
You're good? All right, so let me make sure. I apologize. I know we took you down a bunch of rabbit holes, but again, I'm trying to learn this stuff myself. So, all right, we did the JSA. We now know our task. We tested the boom.
Yeah, right? And there's actually, like I say, a procedure that you follow to test the boom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty much a step-by-step thing. And then the more of the JHA type deal for the bare hand is there is a written work plan. And it has, you know, everybody's name that's going to be, you know, the two linemen that are going to be in the bucket. It's got their names. If you're using two buckets, you got a bucket truck one and a bucket truck two. So you would have the two names for each bucket that are the people that's going to be in the buckets and which ones they're going to be in. And then who's doing what? You got your meter maid. Most companies have someone stay on the truck near the lower controls in case something does happen so that they can get the people down. And that also allows somebody to be able to keep an eye on the meter to make sure the leakage current is hanging in there. And then you've got a qualified observer that's out in a position where he can see. Some of the reasons that I've got those things as detailed as I have, I've been involved in a lot of investigation of incidents that occurred. And one of the major reasons that they occurred is everybody didn't know what their responsibilities were.
Right.
And when you're doing the bare hand, everybody needs to know what their responsibilities are, and that's what they do.
Right. So, again, kind of go back on that real quick. I feel like it's kind of demoralizing, like the word grunt, right? The meter maid. Man, y'all could have come up with a better word for that guy, but...
Well, monitor, I think, is the way that I think...
Yeah, no, but I like it. I love the fact you're like, yeah, the meter maid.
Yeah.
So, I think you answered one of my questions that I was going to have, and that is, so, when they're in, and I don't even know what you call it, the energized position, when they're actually clipped in live line bare handing, there's actually someone standing on that bucket that could run the lower controls in the event of an emergency?
That is my preference.
Oh, really? See, I thought it was everybody's got to be 100 feet away. Don't come near this thing. But you're saying that someone is actually on the truck, and then that, I assume, is, again, in case of an emergency, that is your lower controls operator, but also that's your meter maid that's watching that Vaughn meter that we discussed earlier, making sure that those values are staying within tolerance.
Correct. And if it starts to go up and it continues to go up, sometimes, especially down in your neck of the woods, when a storm starts moving in and the moisture's getting thicker in the air, you know, sometimes you're in a right of way and you can't really see the clouds coming and you don't hear any lightning or hear any thunder or see any lightning. And that meter will actually tell you because it'll start stepping up when the moisture starts kicking in.
Okay.
So the guy, if he's doing it, he can tell you if the guy's doing his job, he can say, hey, this is stepping up. Go ahead and finish up what you're doing so you can get off the line.
Yep. Go ahead, Paul.
You have even like, Joey, as you said, down where we are in Florida, you know, with the right of way, say you're in a big pine forest, and especially right now with all the pollen and everything else, you know, and the wind blowing, you know, could that boom start, you know, collecting pollen and actually start, you know, knocking those numbers around a little bit as well?
Typically, dry contamination isn't a problem. It's kind of like, it's one of the reasons that you do a wet test on your hot sticks, because you get contamination on the fiberglass. Let's say when you're trying to get the truck back in into where you're going, you got a tree branch that rubs down it, or you got something that gets on. Tree sap is very conductive when it's wet, but it's not conductive when it's dry.
Right.
So the moisture typically picks all that up. Even in substations before, I'm sure, where in the mornings when the dew's pretty heavy, it's, that substation is talking really loud.
Yes. A lot of buzz.
She's tracking.
As it dries off, then it quietens down. And it's just, you know, with the dry contamination, I'm not as concerned about as I am as long as it stays dry.
Right.
When it starts picking up the moisture, that's when I have a problem.
I got you. So I guess one, to reference what you just referenced a minute ago, because again, we get a lot of emails and comments a lot of times from new people in the industry. So when you reference, and this is the only thing I can speak to, so that's why I got to point it out, right? I'm not the live line bare hand guru, but you referenced you did a wet test on your hot stick. So Ed, Joey, you probably know more than me. It's been a while since I had to do it, but I believe we were required to test, you know, hot sticks every 2 years. Is that still the case?
Yes.
Okay. And so what we would always do is a dry test, and then we had to use like distilled water or demineralized water. I forget which one. And we would actually just spritz it, you know, spray it out of a general, you know, household sprayer, and then do the wet test. And you're right. When we would do the wet test, that's when that needle, the one I used to use, you know, was like an analog meter with a needle. I'm sure today they have digital values, but you're right. That was the one that always, if it was going to likely fail, that was the one where the needle went a little bit further towards the old red side there, you know? So yeah, that's interesting to think about. We are worried about, you know, dust and contaminants and stuff like that, but you're right. It was most of the time the wet that caused more of the issues. And then I'm trying to think if I had another question there or not. All right, I'm good. Whatever. All right. So where are we at, Joey? We got a guy on the truck. He knows his emergency plan, right? Again, identified in the JHA. He's watching the meter and he's there to operate lower controls. And I like something else you said too. The qualified observer has to be a set distance away so he can actually see really the whole picture. Is that what you're getting at by being, you know, a distance separated?
Yes. He's got, you know, it's depending on where you're working. Sometimes you have down guys and sometimes you have other, you're working in some tight spots and he's another set of eyes because there's a lot of blind spots when you're in that bucket.
Yes.
Oh, sure. And are you, and again, this is just, you know, Joey's preference, right? Do you recommend or even, you know, teach and require that, again, you referenced there could be multiple buckets, right? Depending on the task, you may have two of them doing this. Is there a qualified observer for each bucket or are you okay with one that's kind of watching both?
The only way that I even would consider one qualified observer for two buckets, everyone would have to understand very clear, the operators of the buckets, that only one bucket moves at a time.
Okay. Mm. That makes sense.
So, and you know, we're using handheld radios, talking back to one another. So everybody knows that once all the responsibilities for and who's going to be doing what is discussed, then the actual job procedure is discussed. And you've got a person that's actually doing the circle slash as he reads off a step.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody is not a good candidate for a bare hand person because a bare hand lineman has to be pretty patient, especially when you got two buckets doing things, because you got to wait for one guy or one bucket to complete part of what they're doing before you can do your part.
Okay, so they feel like they're just sitting there idle and they're ready to swing on over, grab this next one and get to work. I can see that.
Yeah.
I know what I was going to ask you earlier, but I think in my head I've already kind of figured it out. But you brought up, you know, like down here with the values, when you brought up maybe a storm starts rolling in, you know how it gets. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, get ready, there's going to be a quick thunderstorm. And I was thinking, like, would it matter if lightning struck you because you're already in a bucket? But, and I know that's silly, but in my head I was just, you know, in theory going, is lightning actually a danger if I'm in a live line bare hand bucket? And then, but yes, because we don't even know the value of that lightning. Like, there's no telling what kind of voltage and amperage would be hitting that line that would then be going through you that bucket's probably nowhere near rated for.
Correct.
Yeah, because that would bring up the same thing like a fault or anything.
Right, that's what it would be, yeah.
And if you're clipped in, you're clipped into the vault.
That's right.
The vault as well.
That's what I was thinking. So yeah, there's no telling what those values that truck would see it at that instantaneous moment in time. Okay, yeah. But at first, when you mentioned the storm, I'm like, who cares? You know, like, I'm good. I'm insulated, man.
Yeah, the amperage on the line doesn't really matter. It's the voltage.
Yeah, that's true, because it's not actually passing through you, so there's really no current. Well, there can't be. The human body doesn't do well with current.
Yeah, one of the biggest things that is kind of hard for people to get across is as long as I stay at the same potential, I'm fine. So that's basically what we're doing. So, and kind of to plug another topic that we're going to talk about, it's the same thing as people understanding equipotential when they're grounded.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do the same potential. And the potential, the voltage isn't what hurts you. It's the fact that I'm at two different potentials.
That's right. Now, with you bringing that up, it made me think back. I've never worked the extremely high voltages, but, you know, I've been told in those high voltages that, you know, you're never supposed to drop anything from the bucket, right? But if you were to, and you're actually clipped into that extremely high voltage, when you have tie wire or a wrench in your hand or something, and it breaks contact with your hand, you're actually breaking that potential. And I've heard that people, you know, it just kind of statically will zap their hands or, you know, stuff like that. I've had people even tell me, honestly, when they spit, if they were to spit, that when that breaks the potential of their lip, that it actually has zapped their lips.
Get out.
With some static. Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've never done it.
I've done that. There are some people that are a whole lot more sensitive. Oh.
Joey said, yeah. Don't work with panties, man.
Yeah. I mean, I know some guys that on 115 that pull the hood up because they can't stand the way it makes air feel.
Oh, yeah.
But then, you know, I work 230 with no hood, but I don't have a whole lot of hair either.
I got you.
Yeah, yours kind of all stand up anyway, right?
Yeah, they do.
So that makes me wonder what you and Paul are just referencing, because you're right. It's all about staying at the same potential. And really, again, this is easy coming from the guy behind a microphone that's never done it. But really, if I'm working in a 115 circuit, it's no different than me working at grounded, right? When it's grounded, I'm at ground potential and I'm working at grounded. There's no difference in potential in what I touch. And then the same thing holds true. If I'm at 115, I'm in series with that, you know, 115 circuit. So there's no difference in potential in what I touch. However, my question is though, what if I need a wrench? I can't just have Jim Bob reach out and hand me a wrench, right? If he's at ground potential, you know, so if I need tool, well, one, obviously, I should go up with what I need, right? We all know that doesn't happen. I can't just, you know, use the jib on that bucket, send a grunt sack down to the dirt, and I got my man throwing, you know, a 3/4-inch wrench in my grunt sack and wheel it back up. So would they have to, do I have to end the live line bare hand session, swing out, or could someone hand me something with like a shotgun stick, a hot stick? That way there's an insulated link, you know, between me in the circuit versus them at ground potential.
Yeah, they can pass it to you. All OSHA says is you can't pass tools or equipment uninsulated.
Okay.
So if I use a shotgun stick to pass a tool out, let's say I'm working on the cold end of an insulator string, and he drops his screwdriver or drops his wrench and I need to pass him one out, and do that from, you know, as long as I use a shot to pass it to him.
Right.
Or some form of hot stick.
Right, yeah. Some tested hot stick.
Yeah, but if you do that and it's a newbie that's in the bucket, what you do is you don't put it on the wire, you just hold it out there to him and let him reach it. But the proper way to do it is to actually take that tool and put it on the conductor.
Right.
And then he can take it and there's no discharge.
Right.
Typically, you're not going to feel anything. If you're wearing your gloves, you're not going to feel anything. You're going to hear the spark. You're going to hear the arc. It's like if, you know, like on a 500 dead end, those insulators very long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
If you got to replace the insulators, you're going to have a crane that flies a J cradle up, and you're going to have to help guide your end and get it underneath the insulators. And there is some metal on that J cradle, and you know it's not at phase potential. So when you reach out to grab it, it's going to make a noise.
Yeah.
So that just kind of goes back to how sensitive you are, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. And that's one of the things I try to do in the class too, is make sure everybody knows that there's going to be some things that you go to do that you're just going to hear a little part, you know, and it's just human nature that you're going to jerk your hand back.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But when you're bringing that end of that J cradle up to a potential, you're going to have a little bit of charging current going there.
Mm. So it just kind of goes back to the age old adage, you know, just the more you do, the more comfortable you are with it.
Sure.
The more understanding that you have of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always tell the guys, there's a difference between being afraid of something and having
it. Yes.
And because if I do start to get myself in a bind, as long as I maintain that respect and don't get into the fear mode, I can think.
Yes.
When I start getting in the fear mode, I'm more reacting than I am thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. That's kind of been the attitude for ages, really, is, you know, if you are going to fear it, the best thing to do is to
walk away.
Yeah. Get out of it. But you definitely have to respect it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I've had folks that did really good on the exam that did not pass when we got out in the field because they really didn't want to do it. They were afraid of it.
Yeah.
That's not good for anybody.
Right. That actually brings me to a point that I was thinking earlier, and maybe this is the time to ask it. But, you know, a lot of, and again, I'm not comparing Live Line Bear Hand to every other mundane task that we do in our industry. I recognize that it's in a different world of its own, usually. But a lot of times in our industry, right, as a grunt and as an apprentice, you're exposed to the task, you're assisting your journeyman, and then you go and possibly take a class and get signed off on proficiency on that task, right? It's hard to never have been exposed to it, done it, and seen it. Go to a class and pass a test, and then they say, oh, we knight you now, perfect in this task. But so is bear hand something where, and I realize you're probably not going to utilize a day one grunt, right? But maybe a mid-step apprentice, can he go up and participate in with a journeyman, a qualified live line bear hand journeyman, and be part of that task a couple times, and then go to Bannerman Training and Consulting, take the actual paperwork side, the testing side, and then become a qualified? Or is this something, because of the nature of one mistake, you know, there's risk versus reward and everything, but a mistake in this sounds significantly higher than if I fail to tighten a bolt on some other task. Is this something where I have to go through training, I have to get qualified, certified, and then I'm allowed to start participating?
Well, there's a little bit of difference between, and it all depends on where you look the terms up, between a certification and a qualification.
Yep, I know. We've always, are you qualified or certified? And who qualified you and what certified him? So
I do certifications, but a lot of the customers that I have, I do the classroom portion. That takes about a day. Sometimes we take the exam the following morning, then we go out to the truck, and then we go over, you know, going through that pre-flight checklist that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually go for the rest of the week, and they're actually, you know, performing tasks and doing work. So I've had several customers that, you know, I was there for them to do one task, and they have another task that's coming up. So they want me to come back, and not necessarily for a recertification, because the guys may have just gotten certified a month ago, but it's a different task, and they want me to be there while those guys are doing that different task to make sure everybody's got it well understood. And then after a while, you know, they get to the point where they realize that most of the things that they're doing, unless it's in a tight spot, you know, if I'm, say, for example, cutting in a floater or tapping up a switch de-energized, pretty much I'm going to do it pretty close to the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is I'm going to be using some mechanical jumpers instead of being able to, like, put my hand on the main line and have one hand on the jumper trying to get it bolted up. You're going to use a mechanical to do that. And there are some companies that have actually allowed their employees to develop a bad habit of using one bonding lead on the main line from the bucket and the second bonding lead from the bucket on the jumper. And they're basically bridging that gap with the bucket. And that's not what the intent is of those of your bonding leads that are on the bucket.
Okay. So,
you know, you basically then at that point, whatever the charging current would be on that jumper going down to the switch, that's on your bucket. And it's on a little number two bonding lead. And you just don't do that.
So kind of backing up for just a few minutes to Jeremy's point a while ago, take it there's somebody out there that's like, you know, I think I'd like to get into live line bare hand, you know, but like Joey was kind of talking, you know, you're going to kind of take me through the test and then I'm going to just jump out there in the bucket and go to work. In the training and the different steps or whatever, do y'all have like training yards that actually has 115, 230, 500 energized, I'm going to say dummy lines that's for training purpose that, you know, the guys can actually go up and clip in and kind of get that feel, you know, not in a major line where you're going to knock a sub out or anything like that, but just training facilities where these guys can actually go up, clip in, and going back to your point, find out how sensitive they are or not.
I think Quanta does. Don't they have that Lazy Q Ranch?
Mm, yes. Out in Texas.
Yeah. I think it's in Texas, right? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joey. That was your question. I don't know.
Yeah. I have done some work for some contractors that had been asked to get bare hand certified by the utility, and the utility actually had a training line,
mm-hmm.
and we used the training line.
Good.
They allowed it, but I've also had some customers that needed some bare hand work done, and they allowed the contractor to certify on their line. They replaced the insulator that needed to be replaced. You know what I'm saying?
So they got some work out of it while you got some training out of it.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah.
Going back to what you said, you know, this is a huge process, and there's a lot that someone has to go through to get to that point to be able to work live line, bare hand. So, but like you said, there's a lot of work that has to go through. And then at the very end, it's clip in and like, oh, I don't like this. Then, you know, that's a lot of time and effort that has been put in to whereas they can kind of familiarize themselves a little bit on the front end of that.
Right.
Then they can kind of get a good idea of like, no, this is not for me. Or, yeah, I think I'm going to like this, you know?
Yeah. And typically the first day that we're in the field, because it is a 40-hour class.
Mm.
So the first day that we're in the field, everybody goes up and bonds off.
Oh, okay.
And at that point, you may have some guys that say, hey, look, yeah, I just ain't comfortable enough. I want to see this done a few times before I want to move in and replace that insulator because I feel like I'm just going to be way too close. And, you know, they got measuring sticks and all that stuff, but there's some guys that are just comfortable.
Yes. And it makes sense.
I had one guy that was concerned that was in the bucket with me. He was concerned about being too close to the pole. And I told him, take the measure, take and measure. He said, I can't do that. I said, why not? He said, because I'm hot. Mm-hmm. I said, but if you were on the pole, would you touch it with the same stick? He said, yeah. I said, so what's the difference? He said, well, I'm hot.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of things that they're kind of getting into the fear versus respect mode, you know?
Yeah.
And that person he just was not cut out for it.
So. All right. So yeah, Joey, so kind of on the apprenticeship, the training. So at what point in my career, let's say I transferred, you know, or hired in on a transmission line crew. At what point in my career would I expect to be sent to your class? Like, so do I get to go to your class as a second, third step apprentice, maybe a year and a half into my career? Or is this more of a topped out apprentice to qualified journeyman?
It varies from union hall to union hall and from non-union company. There are some halls that you have to be a journeyman lineman because it's considered a specialized technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
There are some halls that require you to be a journeyman lineman before you can get certified to bare hand. There are other companies that are halls that you got to be a seventh step.
Okay.
There are some companies that are having such a hard time staffing crews that, I mean, I've had guys there 30 days in on a crew when they come into training.
Really?
Yeah.
Kind of surprising.
Well, I'll be honest with you. They haven't learned the bad habits.
Oh, so you're saying it could be an advantage.
Yeah. One of the things that I've seen is that the longer somebody has been doing it and they've developed some bad habits, they pass the bad habits along. And it's very hard for an apprentice or a younger, newer employee to go back and tell the old guy that he's doing it wrong. So the best thing is got a group that works together. Let everybody come through the class.
Yeah.
Don't break to where you've only got three or four guys because, quite honestly, to be a qualified observer, OSHA says just because you got the title of supervisor, if you're not trained in the technique, you're not a qualified observer.
Mm-hmm.
The whole crew benefits from it. Everybody hears the same thing, but some of the better bare hand linemen that I've seen never developed a bad habit to have to unlearn.
So that kind of goes back with what I had mentioned last week. Jeremy and I were talking about, you know, generation after generation, and some people knew coming into the industry about, you know, that sometimes it is better to actually bring, I'll just use the terminology, a green thumb, greenhorn, mm-hmm. you know, bring him in to where when he's learning it and training, you're training him and he is learning exactly how that company or how that union hall wants them to learn, opposed to someone coming in and say, you know, well, I've already been there, I've done that, I've kind of got my way, and this is how I do it, you know, so I can see it, you know, I guess to a point you're kind of in between a rock and a hard spot kind of where if you don't have a lot of people coming into the industry, then you've got to start them out younger because you need people in them buckets. But at the same time, you kind of want to be careful because you don't want to just stick somebody in a bucket just to be sticking them in a bucket. So I can see it both ways. But again, anyone out there listening saying, hey, I may want to get into that. Maybe it would be a good advice to them is, you know, check your local companies, check your local union halls on, you know, their wants and desires before maybe you get into that. So you would already have an idea of how long is it going to take me before I can actually get up there and clip in? Or how long is it going to take me before I can do this? But if it does vary between different companies or union halls, you know, maybe that just kind of a little advice to kind of look into that beforehand so that you'll have that idea already.
Yeah.
So, Joey, one thing that just kind of come come to mind is, you know, I would think that communication is a, which I personally believe communication is a large part of everything. I mean, that's what we're doing right now.
That's right.
Communicating. But especially in this live line bare hand, and you've got, you know, different cultures, different makeup within a crew. Do you come across, or, you know, is there issues with, you know, maybe language barriers or communication issues and stuff, you know, between a crew or anything like that?
Yeah, it's been prevalent enough when I'm doing training out in the Southwest that I've actually had my bare hand manual translated into Spanish.
Wow. Really? Really?
Yeah. There were some guys that were coming into class that really couldn't speak English. And so it was taking the class a whole lot longer to get through because there was a translator that was kind of translating everything that I was showing on the screen.
Yeah, doubling up on everything. So 40 hours just went to 80. All
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they would get on the exam and somebody's reading the exam and I'm not fluent in Spanish, but I don't know whether he's telling the guy the answer. And so I had to come up with the way, not only, I mean, I provide you with a training manual and it's yours. You can carry it with you. You can do whatever you want to with it. But for me to give someone who can't speak English a manual and expect them to use it,
right,
when, you know, if they need information, at least now they will have the one Spanish so that they can look at it and really know what's being said.
Right. And I guess to try to give some context, because again, we, you know, I was showing Paul last week, we're worldwide, right? So we got listeners, like, it was amazing, is it not?
It was. See? All over.
I mean, it's crazy.
It is.
But even if we think U.S., you know, if someone's listening in Vermont or Maine, maybe New Hampshire, right? And I don't know what their demographic breakdown is, but even for us down here, I know one of the utilities I used to work for, they had a rule that only one person had to be fluent in English. So you could have a crew made up of 10 or 20 guys, and as long as one person was fluent in English, so that that person could then communicate, you know, with me, with the utility or whatever. But that is something that is becoming more and more and more prevalent.
Yes.
So that's interesting to hear, you know. So you had to convert your manual to Spanish. But then I guess my concern would be, Joey, is so when you're doing the training, though, he can't understand you.
No, he can't understand me. He can follow along in the book. But also, you know, we were talking about the job plan that's written out step by step. If I have someone that is only fluent in Spanish that's in one of the buckets, that's operating the bucket, then it's got to be written in English and Spanish.
Right.
So, it does take a little bit longer, but that communication part is so key. Everybody know what everybody's doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I guess the good news is, and this is, you know, only one example, which is kind of extreme, but I would think the good news is I don't care what language you speak. We all know what an all stop is. When a man's jumping and screaming, I don't care what's coming out of his lips. That means stop. You know what I mean? So I guess, again, not to downplay it, because, communication could always be a barrier. But at least I would like to think, ultimately, when it comes to a life-saving all stop, you know, I don't care what language my man is speaking. I'm going to understand when he wants me to stop. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. And again, that's part of the times, right? We have a changing demographic and in the country, which means we're going to have a changing demographic in the industry.
And that goes back to, that's the importance of your pre-job, is that, you know, if you do have some barriers or you do have some communication issues in there, that everyone in that pre-job, before anything's being done, everybody's on the same page. Everybody knows when it gets to that point, stop means stop, no matter what. And everybody is already kind of brought to that point in the pre-job that they know. So that there again, just the importance of a pre-job.
Yeah, absolutely. So Joey, I'm good. I greatly appreciate it. And I know, again, you do a 40-hour class and we've been talking like an hour and 10 minutes, right? So there's obviously no way to inform the listeners on everything that's in your head. So I'm sure, you know, we're going to get emails. I'm sure we're going to have some questions, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, Messenger, again, emails, whatever. Anyhow, I'm good, man. I guess real quick, if you want, you know, I had teased, I think it was at the beginning of this show or actually maybe last week, the Easter episode, that you were going to come and do like live line bare hand. you wanted to do one on qualified rigor and then another one on grounding. Mm-hmm. So I'll let you tease it, man, because I don't even know yet, right? What show are they going to hear from you in a couple weeks? What's our next one?
I think we probably could tie the protective grounding in.
Okay, so there you have it, folks. In 2 weeks, Joey Bannerman will be doing protective grounding.
Looking forward
to it. Yeah, so now we know the next one to prep for.
Yeah.
But I had no idea which order we were going to do any of this till right now. And then, Joey, also one more thing before we let you go, man. We're doing the promotion with linebrotherskeeper.org with Zach and Melinda. And I know since you've been on the show before, you've already had a care package. Do you want me to send you another care package as a guest, or would you like me to make the donation in your name?
Like me to just make the donation.
That's awesome, man. I appreciate it. I appreciate you wanting to support them as well. Paul, do you have any final thoughts for Joey real quick? I mean, not that we ain't going to talk to him in a week or two, but.
No, I'm just thankful that he's on and, you know, sharing your extensive knowledge with everyone. And like Jeremy said, I mean, you know, we're just scratching the surface right now. So anybody out there, you know, you got any questions, you got some concerns, some, you know, maybe you thought of something, just be sure to drop an email or whatever. And if Jeremy and I cannot answer it, we got Joey's phone number.
I know
and,
I can.
We'll definitely give him a call. We'll try to get those answers for you. You know, contact Joey or, you know, check out his sites and everything else at Bannerman Training and Consulting. And, you know, I'm sure he'll try to help you out the best way that he can.
Yep. And Joey, so I was just going to ask you, do you want to plug your website, business? And then obviously, once we do publish this episode, we will attach any links and stuff, you know, on it as well.
Yeah, I've got some work going on my website right now, but it's BannermanTraining.com.
Okay. Bannerman, BannerMan.
Yes.
That's right. So two N's there in BannermanTraining.com. All right. And again, Joey, we appreciate it, man. And look forward to talking to you here in a couple of weeks on grounding.
That's all right. Well, thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Joey.
All right, Paul, what do you think, man?
I think that a lot of coverage in a short period of time.
Yeah, I know. I know. And honestly, I could have probably asked him 10 more questions.
Yes.
But I don't know that anybody wants to sit here and hear a 2.5 hour episode at one shot.
That's right.
Because, you know, even if you only have 5 questions, when he says something, brings up 5 other points, exactly. You know? So, yeah, I am looking forward. He just said we'll do the qualified grounding next time in 2 weeks. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well.
Personal grounding, yep.
I'm looking forward to that as well. At least that's something I have done.
Yes.
Right?
Well, and with that, too, it's kind of neat that we're going from one extreme to the other. You know?
Right, yeah, you're right.
We just went to live line.
That's right. From hot to
energized
dead.
To now we're going to dead. So we'll be able to, from one week to the other, be able to talk about the total contrast between the two. So
that's right.
I think it's good. I think it's a good back-to-back episodes, and already looking forward to a couple of weeks and see what Joey has for us with that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, perfect. Since I'm looking at the calendar, so that today is April 7th. So that'll be April 21st when we get the grounding one out.
Yes.
All right, I think I'm good. You know what? I do have a few shout-outs. I meant to get these last week on Easter, man.
Yeah.
I told you, I'm like, crap. Forgot to do some shout-outs. So real quick, a couple shout-outs here. We got Jordan. Jordan's been very, very active. We actually mailed him some hard hat stickers. Just, again, as thanks for being active, participating in the show.
Yes.
We got Jimmy. We got Chuck. We got Jose. We got Gabe. Matt, and then also Casey. All of those, I believe, were from Facebook. They're just being active, participating, leaving comments, liking, all that good stuff, right?
That's what we need.
We also have Jose on LinkedIn. I don't know if it's the same Jose that was also active on Facebook, but on LinkedIn, Jose's been very active and commenting and liking on a lot of our posts, so appreciate that. Austin, he sent us a cup pitcher at a substation a while back.
Oh, yes.
We got James, he sent us a cup pitcher on the back of a relay panel a while back. And you know what? I want to address something, and I'm not complaining. Let's face it, we're all facing this thinking algorithm game of how Facebook and even the podcast, right, how they rank you based on engagement and 5-star reviews and all that good stuff, right? But James posted a picture of the cup on the back of the relay. And Paul, the picture's right here if you want to look at it. Granted, that's a very small photo that I have printed off right there.
Yes.
But I felt bad because people were tearing him up in the comments about why would they use that gray wire? I like my wire all color, you know, like a red and a white and a black and a blue and all that. So I want y'all to know, I reached out to James because I've seen wiring both ways as well. Okay. And that was a pre-wired panel from a factory. So it isn't that James did that wiring job, you know, but yeah, I forget there was some comments under that photo and they were kind of beating my man down a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But you know how it is too on social media. media, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, everybody is the best expert in the world on social media.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I actually talked to James. He that is a pre-wired. Well, someone, I think, put that in the comments that, hey, that looks like a pre-wired panel.
Yes.
Anyway.
Manufactured.
That's right. So that came from a factory with that wiring already completed, and then the utility brings their wiring to the other side. But yeah.
Correct.
But that is the case. Anybody that saw that photo on Facebook and thought that James did not do a good job with his wiring, that was not James's wiring. And James, we appreciate the photo anyway. And then let's see, we got Jason and Will on LinkedIn. We're also liking some posts as well. And also, I don't have it written down here, but I saw this the other day, so I'll go ahead and mention it off of memory. But we got a guy named Jack. Yeah, Jack. And he listens on Good Pods. Again, another app that you can listen to podcasts on. And I think Jack has left us a 5-star review on every episode.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, on every episode he's left us a 5-star review. He's left us some comments. So we appreciate the engagement there, Jack. And again, that's really the game at this point, is playing the algorithm game. And so, yeah, if y'all can, if you haven't already, leave us a 5-star review. If you have, leave another one. We don't care.
The more, but, the better.
That's right. I mean, we're all trying to play against this, you know, AI, you know, algorithm out there that decides where you get ranked and how often your podcast or social media gets seen by others.
And be sure to share it with
absolutely
others. I mean, this industry is actually huge.
It is.
I mean, it is huge. And, you know, you just start sharing it. You don't want to, you know, beat it into them or bother them about it. But, you know, hey, just kind of share it and kind of get some people maybe drawn to it. And then you never know. It just keeps multiplying and multiplying. And the way I look at it, I mean, the more people that's involved in this, the more subjects, the more questions, the more issues, you know, the more information that we have to cover. And, you know, the more we get to talk about different things, the more somebody out there is going to say, oh, I've been wondering about that.
Right.
You know? So we may not be able to cover every single thing, but maybe get enough listening and interaction and everything else. Maybe eventually.
Well, and you know, the thing is, as the group grows, right, as we gain listeners, we gain more knowledgeable people in the industry.
Exactly.
And then that's how, if someone hears this episode with Joey talking about Live Line Bear Hand, we may have 30 other guys out there that do Live Line Bear Hand and say, hey, I want to add on to that.
Yes.
And that allows all of us to continue to learn from each other. Again, we're students of the industry.
And what would be great is somebody come in and say, hey, I sat through Joey's training,
right,
and now I'm out there doing it every day.
That, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
So that would be neat.
Absolutely. So, yep, that's the goal, right? Every listener we gain is a potential interview or co-host or more knowledge and someone else that we can network with and learn from.
Yes.
And ultimately, that's the whole point of this, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, man, I'm good. Do you have any final words?
No, just to your point right there, that's one thing about this industry. It's an always learning industry. You never learn at all. It's always learning, and I hope this helps.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man, I'm good. You ready?
I'm good.
Let's hit the button.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening, and we welcome y'all to tune in next time. We really do appreciate you, and we would like to encourage you to support and sponsor our podcast. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and email us at workingwithlightning@gmail.com. Y'all be safe.